This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Fixing the troubled educational system is one of the critical issues facing our country. But where do you start and what direction do you go? International education leader and author Sir Ken Robinson delved into the topic in a 2006 TED Talk, How Schools Kill Creativity, which has had more than 31 million views and generated thousands of queries on how to solve this problem. Robinson expands on that famous talk in his new book, Creative Schools, The Grassroots Revolution That's Transforming Education. He joins us to talk about his ideas for improving the educational system. Hi, Ken.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Were you surprised by the reaction that was generated by your TED Talk?
Pleasantly surprised, yes. I mean, these are issues I've been concerned about for a very long time, and I've worked with education systems around the world for most of my professional life. And it was quite a short talk. But yes, I was very gratified by it. It's been seen in about 150 countries. There's been a tremendous response to it. And I think, you know, it clearly touched a nerve.
Yeah, it touched a nerve. Is education one of those topics that's like religion or money?
Yes, absolutely it is. It affects everybody. I think people have different responses to the idea of education. In the abstract, as a sort of social policy field, people may or may not be very engaged in it, but when it comes to their own children or their own experiences in education or the effects that education has on the people they actually care for and love, then it really goes very, very deep with people. It's something that everybody goes through and everyone's affected by it and changed by it. And the quality opportunities that people get in schools can have a bearing on, you know, how they see themselves and what they do for the rest of their lives. So, yes, it's a very profound an important issue for most people.
Now, on the TED Talk, you stress the importance of creativity, saying it's as important in education as literacy. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I suppose the root of all this is that I believe that we're all born with very deep and extensive talents. In a way, all children are, I mean, it's true of you, it's true of me at school, it's true of everybody listening to this, that we're all born, so to speak, as unfinished business. We're born with tremendous natural possibilities, natural capacities. Whether we develop them is a question of opportunity and encouragement, and also whether or not we have the right kind of passion for our talents, or whether we're encouraged to have that. So I did a book a couple of years ago called The Element, which looked at how different people had created their lives from having discovered what their real talents were, or the range of talents. So creativity for me is both a real idea, an operational idea, that we all create our lives, that our communities, our economies depend upon the development of our creative abilities in all sorts of ways, and that education should encourage the development of these capacities. The problem, as I see it, is that we, particularly in America, and I should say, Mark, you know, I live in America. Right? It's not that I've just popped over here to have a chat about it. I lived here for 15 years now. Mind you, I live in Los Angeles. Some people say that's not really America, but I think it is. It's a short plane ride from here to America anyway. And my experience of it is, from having visited a lot of schools and traveled the country a lot and worked with lots of people, is that the culture of standardization and testing that's become such an oppressive force, I think, for a lot of schools and school districts around the country, is really stifling the capacities of our kids. It's stifling the creativity of our teachers. And it's creating, I think, all sorts of problems, which is becoming urgent to solve.
So you're not a fan of standardized testing and rote learning, I take it?
I wouldn't say I'm not a fan of any form of testing. Some forms of testing can be very helpful, you know, diagnostically. I mean, if you think of medicine, for example, if you go for a blood test, I mean, if I do, I want some standardized tests. I want to know what my blood count is compared to everybody else's, not some scale the doctor invented in the car. You know, I mean, I think it's important that we do test kids occasionally to see how they're getting on, to support them. That's right and proper. And it's not an argument in principle against any form of testing. But the situation now is almost that the education system is dominated by testing. You know, since No Child Left Behind was passed into law, in the last 10 years or so, the numbers of tests have accelerated enormously. I mean, children now are being tested in English, in reading and literacy, in math, And in science case, you know, about 14 times over the course of their time in school. And in some states, some districts and states, it's very much more than that. The pressure of testing is being compounded by the Race to the Top program of the current administration. And it's called high-stakes testing for a good reason, which is that the resources available to schools can depend on the results of tests. The progress of kids can be made dependent upon it. And the promotion or even the retention of teachers can be geared to the results of tests. So this isn't just diagnostic. This is something quite different. And it's not only a big pressure on schools. I mean, it's true. I mean, we talk about this in the book, that kids these days in many schools are either doing tests or preparing for tests or being debriefed from tests. And the result is it's narrowed the curriculum a lot. Things that aren't relevant to tests get cut out. Some things that parents listening to this conversation might have taken for granted in their own education, like recess or theater programs or sports, get pushed to one side as in this relentless pressure to get through the testing program. And so it's not the fact of testing in itself, and I'm not, of course, against factual learning. It's the sort of pressure it's created in schools, which is suffocating other sorts of activity.
In your book, you give examples of what works, and one of the examples is Smoky Road Middle School in Georgia, which really had the odds stacked against it. They had low achievement, high poverty. A new principal comes along, and she turns things around. What did she do right, Ken?
Well, it's a really good point, this, Mark. I should say about creative schools, I just want to say a word or two about Smoky Road. The reason I wrote this book with my partner, Lou Aronica, is that, as I say, I've worked in education for a very long time, and people naturally say, well, look, if that's the problem, if schools are being inhibited in this way and the dynamics of education are being thwarted, so, you know, what's the answer? And so, I mean, some people say to me, you know, tell us what the problem is in that TED talk, but not the answer. And I say, well, give me a break. It was 18 minutes. I mean, you can't cover everything. But the fact is, there are solid principles here to think about, and the key to it. Now, for any parents listening, this is, I think, the point to emphasize is that education is about living people. It's not about data production. It's about actual children, people who wake up in the morning with, you know, fears and anxieties and hopes and aspirations. You know, your children, the kids that you know and the kids that you love, and they're all different. You know, if you have two kids or more, I bet you they're completely different from each other. Kids are. You know, we all are. We all have unique talents. So the key to me is to personalize education and not to standardize it. Now, that's not the same as not having standards. It's important, I think, not to confuse standardizing with raising standards. But standardizing actually tends to bring things down to the lowest common denominator. What you really want is high standards in school, which are related to helping every child develop their own particular talents and interests. And of course, there are things we need to learn in common as well. But you need to learn about yourself in school and become confident and buoyant and to know what you're good at. So what happened in Smoky Road is that it was a school that was not doing well at all on almost every measure. People didn't want to send their kids to Smoky Road. It wasn't doing well on the tests. It was a pretty bleak sort of place. And a new principal was appointed called Laurie Barron, who went on, by the way, to be the middle school teacher of the year. Head teacher of the year. And what she realized when she got there, I mean, it was a natural thing for her to realize it because she's a very gifted teacher, is that before you get onto anything else, you have to engage the kids. You know, kids weren't showing up at the school. They were disengaged from lessons. They weren't taking part. So she and the staff embarked on a rigorous program of really getting to know their students. And as she said, if for one child music was their thing, then they encouraged them to develop their music. That was the way in. If for somebody else it was football, then if that's the most important thing to them, then they encouraged them and helped them. And because they were helping the children to do the things that really mattered to them, they were gaining their trust and their enthusiasm, engagement for all the other things they wanted them to learn as well. So over the course of several years, and these things are never overnight, of course, over the course of several years, the school was completely turned around. The truancy rate fell away completely. The engagement rate went right up. Parents and families were happy. The kids were happy, and the staff were very engaged. And they went on, by the way, also to take care of what had to be done for the kids to get through the test. But it didn't dominate everything they had to do. So those scores also went up, the things they were required to do by the state standards. And the moral is it, and it's true. We have the whole book is full of examples of schools where teachers and principals and parents have worked together to change the culture to create one of engagement and personalization. And the result of it is that children find they can do all kinds of extraordinary things they didn't know before because their minds and their hearts are engaged in learning. And that's really the key to this.
So how do you balance today's push for standardized testing with approaching each student individually?
Well, the first thing I always want to say about this is that personalizing education isn't some sort of gimmick. There really isn't an alternative if you think of it. One of the problems that America faces just now in education, it's not unique to America, I ought to say it's true of other countries as well, is that very many kids leave school altogether before they graduate. In America, it depends how you calculate these things, but in America, something like 25% on average of students who start the ninth grade don't graduate from the 12th grade. I always hesitate, Mark, to call them dropouts. I don't like the term dropout because it implies that the kids have failed the system. You know, if you had a business and you were losing 25% of your customer base every year, you might wonder whether it was the customers or the business, you know. And I think in my experience over a long time, and we give lots of examples in the book, is that there are very, very few children and young people who really don't want to learn, who can't be helped to learn, and who don't want to do their best and can't be helped to do their best. But the system itself often alienates them. You can imagine, I mean, sitting there day after day doing things for which you see no real purpose and for which you get no great incentive. You know, I can't imagine there's a kid in the state who gets up in the morning thinking, what can I do to help raise the state's reading standards? But what they do want to do for their own account is learn how to read and write and all the other things. So personalization, I say, isn't a gimmick. It's recognizing that education isn't some impersonal industrial process with gadgets going through it. It's real living people. And I'm sure anyone listening to this can think back to their own time in school. There were teachers who turned them on and teachers who turned them off and subjects that excited them and others that didn't. But they could be made excited with the right sort of atmosphere and culture of encouragement. So it's about recognizing that education is as personal to the kids as it is to their parents, to their families, and their communities. And once you get that right, and I said somewhere in the book, you know, people ask me about my theories, and I said, well, you know, this isn't a theory. It's just what works. It's why this particular book is so focused on practice and empowering people. We have a whole chapter on parents, for example, what parents can do to work with their schools. There's a whole chapter on the nature of teaching. There's a chapter on other forms of assessment, a chapter on curriculum. So I'm very keen to take it step by step and say this isn't a theory. This is what works, and the results are better all around.
So who should lead the way on this transformation, Ken? What level do we start transforming the education system at? Is this a federal issue or a state issue? How do you view it?
I think it has to – well, firstly, education happens in schools. By schools, I don't just mean the sorts of facilities we're familiar with. By a school, I mean any community that comes together to learn together. There are more and more people who are moving towards homeschooling. It's still a relatively small movement, but some people really feel that's the best way to get the best from their own children. And of course, that's a big commitment of time and expertise and so on. I think, you know, for most children, that the option will still be to go to some form of conventional schooling, though there are alternatives now. So school is wherever people come together. And it has to, if it doesn't happen there, Mark, it's not happening. It doesn't matter what policymakers say in the Senate buildings or in the committee rooms of the legislative building. If it's not happening in the schools, it's not happening. So that's why the book is subtitled The Grassroots Revolution That's Transforming Education. In the end, what we're trying to do in education is to help people to learn. And children do learn anyway. You know, if you've got children or anybody listening to this has got young children, you know, kids have a tremendous appetite for learning. And, I mean, for example, take language. Language is the most extraordinary thing. Kids learn to speak in the first few years of their lives. It's an amazing thing, and nobody teaches them to do it. You couldn't. It's too complicated. You know, you wouldn't have the time. They wouldn't have the patience. There doesn't come a point where you sit your child down and say, look, we have to talk, you know, or more specifically, you do, and this is how it's going to work. So it has to happen in the schools. And the argument I'm putting in the book is it has to be built from the ground up. Firstly, the role of teachers is to help people learn, and Every great school knows that you have to support, you have to recruit great teachers, you have to support them, you have to treat them properly, and you have to give them the freedom to do their job properly. Teaching is a vocation. It's an art form. And if you turn it into some sort of testing delivery system, then you take the life out of schools. And that's been shown time and again. Then you need great principals who recognize the opportunities for innovation in schools. And all the schools that I know that have done really wonderful things have a visionary leader in charge of them. So there's a whole chapter in the book about the roles of principals. Parents have a big role to play here. And often parents feel that that there's nothing they can do, or if there is, they don't know what it is. So what we've tried to do in the book is to empower parents to understand what's happening in education and what they can do personally to help improve the situation for their own children at their own school. But then we have a chapter on what should policymakers do at the district level. Their job is to create a climate where schools can really flourish, and also the state and federal governments should be doing that. And I'll tell you the problem, Mark, as I see it just now, is that it's all sort of back to front. There's a lot of pressure from the top down, lots of mandates and controls and penalties for not getting things done in the way that legislators, at least some, think they should. And it's back to front. What legislators and policymakers ought to be doing is creating conditions of encouragement and growth at the ground level. And if you do that, if you empower schools and teachers and parents and kids to learn together, that's when you get the results. And I say it's not a theory. If you look at what's happening in other countries, that's what works. And if you look at what happens when it all gets standardized, it really doesn't.
Well, how hopeful are you that our educational system can be fixed, Ken?
Very, very. The thing is that people have a tremendous will to succeed, particularly in this country. I mean, it's not exclusive here, of course not. But, you know, people want to do the right thing. I've no doubt about that. I mean, I'm not maligning legislation policymakers or anybody else and saying, you know, you're doing this deliberately to mess things up. I think people want it to work. It's just, it's the wrong prescription. And if you look at some of the other high-performing systems around the world, they are doing things differently now. Since we've had these international league tables, for example, America often looks enviously at what's been happening in Singapore and South Korea and in China. But the fact is, those systems, which have been doing very well on standardized testing, are increasingly moving away from them. I was at a meeting recently in Europe where we had the Minister for Education from South Korea saying that they realize that all this testing has been counterproductive for many of their students, and they want now to go to a more personalized and creative form of education. China is saying that all these tests and so on aren't going to create the kind of people or the kind of education that the country now so urgently needs. One of the most successful systems in the world is in Finland. They routinely outperform other countries in standardized tests, but they also do so in terms of student engagement, of fulfillment of teachers as a profession, links with the community. And interestingly, 40 years ago, the situation in Finland was comparable in many ways to the situation 40 years ago here in America. But they didn't go down the route of standardization. They went down the route I'm describing of customizing and personalizing education to the local communities and to the students and parents who make up that community. And interestingly, Finland has no standardized tests. They don't have a rigid national curriculum. They have a flexible one. There's just one test at the end of high school. To become a teacher in Finland is a real achievement. They select rigorously, but they support teachers as a proper profession. They're well compensated. They've done almost everything differently, and the results have been, in many ways, very much better. So I think the thing to recognize is that this isn't an overnight fix, but there are things people can do right away. And that's what we say in the book. You can make changes in schools starting tomorrow morning, and head teachers are doing that, and so are teachers in their own classrooms. You can make changes at the district level right away. You can get going with it. There's already room for innovation in the system. And what we're trying to do in the book is to show what those opportunities are and the better results that you get if you take them.
Ken, thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure, Mark. Thanks so much for asking me on.
Sir Ken Robinson, his new book is Creative Schools, The Grassroots Revolution That's Transforming Education.